believe some of the greater opportunities are the improvements in transparency that are occurring, the improvements in liquidity and access, frankly, more people coming in participating, right? We've got 100 and something thousand people that have signed up through our website, interested in farmland investing. We see that as a big positive, right? It's bringing investment dollars to rural America, rural regions of the world, and helping to grow businesses and grow ultimately the output there, which is farming products, food, fuel, and fiber that we all need. So very excited about that continued professionalization within the asset class and the benefits that can bring to both the investors and to farmers and ultimately to society as a whole. So very excited to see a lot of this play out in the coming decade ahead of us.
This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and my name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And today on the podcast, Carter Malloy, CEO and founder of AcreTrader, is coming to us from Arkansas in the United States. Hi, Carter.
Hey there. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. So this is going to be a really interesting podcast, one I'm looking forward to. Carter, you'll tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the business of investing in, of all things, farmland.
So I grew up here in Arkansas, where I live today. I spent about a dozen years as a professional equity investor, most recently at a larger long-short fund. In the background of that, and for some background on me, I grew up in a farming family. So my dad's in farming and has been my whole life. So I always had this real affinity for farmland. And growing up, I knew it as a place, and then eventually learned that, oh, that's a place where we grow lots and lots of food. But it wasn't until later in life, when I was working professionally in equities, that I began investing in farmland and recognized it as this pretty incredible asset class. So that's really how we got here today, is it's a personal passion of mine and has been for most of my life.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, that's amazing. I had a dad who's a lawyer who I think was a sort of wannabe farmer, and at some point in time he bought some land to do a what they call a subdivision, like a little development outside of Melbourne, Australia, and he brought some cows on it, and I don't think that it went very well. You know, I think he was a much better lawyer than he was a farmer, although he often referred to it. Okay, so explain to us, how does farmland investing work for those in our audience like me who wouldn't even have considered it as an asset class?
You can think of it somewhat similarly to real estate investing, in that you can make money a couple of ways, right? You can make money through appreciation of the asset, so the value of that asset growing over time, and you can make money from the rents you receive off of that asset, whether that is the farmer paying you a rent each year, or you have the revenue share alongside that farmer. But it's a pretty straightforward asset. I think one thing that's pretty unique is there's only this much farmland, right? It's a finite asset because it's physical. There's a limitation on how much dirt we have in the world. And that's actually shrinking due to development and things like that. And so less farmland, more and more mouths to feed, fairly straightforward supply and demand economics there.
Right. Of course, with technology increasing the yield from farms, That's not a linear equation, right?
That's correct. And that actually inserts a sort of a third dimension there, right? Which is shrinking supply, increasing demand, and then for the better farms out there, if you have good soil, good water, and good underwriting to invest in that farm, right? Those yield improvements can help revenue on a per farm basis.
Okay. Now, in the real estate market, we've seen, you know, even in, you know, your and my history, you know, at least one boom and bust cycle leading up to the 2008 crisis, and then post, and then potentially some really big movements in real estate now with the changes that are happening in office in the office market, and perhaps in other sectors of the market. Do you see the same wild swings in farmland?
Wild swings, probably not, right? Well, there are certainly like real vacillations in price over time with any market, one of the more intriguing things about farmland is that we do not see those wild swings. In the early 80s, there was a big one, big leverage driven, and it's been a part of the farm economy. But as a whole, that's what's most intriguing to me as an investor about farmland, or one of the many things, is the consistency of that appreciation. It's, look, we're not in a get rich quick scheme out here, right? Like, you rarely will ever hear somebody saying, I doubled my money last year in farmland.
Right.
Also rarely hear people saying,
unless they drilled a hole and found some oil under the farm.
Right. But you don't hear the inverse of that very often, which is I lost all my money in farmland. And so what we're looking for is that consistent compounding effect over time.
Okay. So when you compare farmland to other types of real estate, other than, it sounds like a lower risk, lower return type of deal, what are the other sort of comparison points that you would make, good and bad?
So on our website, there's some information on this where it's pretty interesting at acrecreator.com, where we look at the volatility of various asset classes relative to the return profile of that asset class, right? Okay. I think what a professional investor would know is a Sharpe ratio or some derivative of a Sharpe ratio. What are your risk-adjusted returns? Mm-hmm. And that's what's fascinating about farmland is that the last 30 years, the return profile has been similar to some high-returning asset classes like real estate, commercial real estate, or the S&P as an example. However, when you look at it with that second axis there, right, returns are similar, but the volatility or the variability in those returns has just been much, much less. So as a result, across many measures, you do see a more attractive, more intriguing Sharpe ratio with farmland.
Okay. So as what you're saying is nice returns, but not as much volatility, not as much downside. What are some of the risks, though, for somebody that's willing to think about buying some farmland?
Just like any investment, versus like history is not always the determinant of what's to come next, right? So there are macro risks involved. There are commodity price risks involved. To make sure to call out, we're not necessarily in the farming business. We're in the business of owning land and renting to farmers. But nonetheless, there can be commodity risk over time. Perhaps one of the greater risks out there is just underwriting risk. And I think that's true with just about any type of asset. Buy the wrong ones, you can be in a really bad place. So that's a big part of what our team does here, is really focus on trying to identify interesting investment opportunities to bring to our website.
Okay. And what does an interesting piece of farmland look like? How do you distinguish that from an uninteresting piece of farmland?
There's quite a bit. The idiosyncrasies between literally one parcel and the one next door can be pretty dramatic in this industry, and pretty large price discrepancy as well. So it is quite a unique and large challenge to go through. But ultimately, what we're looking for really is like good climate, right? So a good place to grow things, mm-hmm. good soils, and good water, and then a good financial profile, right? So you can have a great quality farm that's too expensive, and that usually is the case. You can also have a very poor quality farm that's not cheap enough. And so making sure you measure against the financial profile. And that financial profile is a little more nuanced. It's not just the actual price. It's the price per point of the soil score, as an example. It's what does the local tenant market look like? And that, are there enough renters there if your farmer retires that there's somebody else to come move on the land? There's about 100 variables our team looks at any individual farm coming to the platform.
Right. Interesting. I'm going to pick up on one point, which is finding new tenants. So, of course, you know, when anybody who's been in the real estate market before knows that that's one of the key things you look for. Are you going to be able to find somebody else to come into your office, into your house? You know, what's the supply and demand like? How does that work in farming? You know, you sort of think of farming as a more traditional industry where farmers, you know, farm their land for, you know, years, decades, even generations in some cases, you know, your family being a case in point. So how does it work?
That is typically the case. And what's interesting about that, maybe first to call it a little nuance, is that we typically receive rent once a year, maybe twice a year. And that's often paid in March before the farmer plants. So if your farmer doesn't pay rent, then you have the opportunity to have a different farmer come onto the property. But what in reality, in these rural communities and dealing with farmers, what we see across the industry is very, very limited defaults or vacancies, right? So you have to think, like, while there's a decent proxy here between farmland and commercial real estate, we're not dealing with tenant turnover constantly. We're not dealing with monthly rental payments, as an example. We're not dealing with toilets and broken walls and TI necessarily. So it's just a far, far simpler ask.
You're giving me an image of a sort of a toilet in the middle of a field, and you know that's quite funny. Okay, how are rents determined? So you know what if you're not having a lot of change of your tenant, and each piece of land is slightly different. So how do you determine rent?
So there are a couple of variables that will help understand rent. First is the volume of things being grown on that farm. So what is your, as an example, your bushel per acre yield, or your pounds per acre if you're growing mm-hmm. tree nuts? So what's the yield of that farm? What's the yield expected to be? And what is the commodity price? And those two things will obviously give you revenue. From there, then you back into some form of a revenue share with that farmer. And so in some cases, it can just be a straight cash rent. So I'll give you an example where
right.
a farmer would pay $300 per acre, and that's that. And they pay that in March in a conversation. Or you can say, hey, pay $200 and based on a formula, pay $200 in March, based on a formula, maybe they pay $30 or maybe they pay $200 at the end of the season. You know, so you're sort of riding along their success on yield and pricing. So there's a few different lease structures, but again, they tend to be relatively straightforward.
Right. You mentioned commodity risk and commodity pricing a couple of times. So, you know, the prices is for soft commodities, agricultural commodities, can fluctuate quite wildly. And, you know, farming, I would imagine, is a business with very long lead times. You know, you plant in the spring and you harvest in the fall or you know, the end of the summer. How much of a risk does that pose for you as the owner of the underlying real estate when you could have these big swings in commodity prices?
So through annual cycles, it's fairly straightforward. That farmer's often selling through that cycle and or participating in futures markets, right? So you can hedge your pricing risk through a single year, more or less, maybe even through multiple years. Mm-hmm. As a broader statement, though, over time, material fluctuations in commodity prices can impact rents. Now, the good news broadly is that over a long period of time, those commodity prices have gone up, right? They are directly right. inflation linked. In fact, they are part of the calculation for inflation. So what's interesting is the other side of that as well, which is that farmland investing can be seen as a hedge against inflation because your rents are somewhat correlated over time with rising commodity prices.
Okay. So let's just talk about the inflation story for a minute. There are different types of real estate assets. Some are more inflation sensitive and some are less. In the farmland market, are rents ever linked to inflation? Or is it sort of this indirect link saying, you know, we're linked to commodity prices and those are linked to inflation? And maybe how often do you update the rent? Because that's obviously a key factor, you know, in a cycle like the one we've been in now, where you've had this rapid rise in inflation and interest rates.
That's correct. As a landowner, more often than not, landowners tend to desire shorter term rents so that they mm-hmm. can adjust those rents with changes in markets over time. However, if there is a multi-year lease structure, that will usually have some sort of an inflation kicker, similar to what you'd see in commercial real estate, right? Where hey, next year we're going to move it up by X percent, or used to be LIBOR, Prime Plus, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. What would be a long lease? You know, is that 5-10 years or is that 2-3 years?
5 would be very long. 10 would be situations like if you're doing tree nuts as an example, where you have a more permanent style crop, so you can do longer leases there or doing a revenue share.
Okay. And in your business, what about leverage? You know, leverage is sort of a key factor when you consider sensitivity to interest rates and to inflation. What type of leverage levels do you guys take?
It is, and I'm glad you asked about that. So it's an interesting dynamic within the world of farmland is that farmland owners, landowners, farmers tend to be fairly fiscally conservative, right? Right. So what's intriguing is speaking about inflation, there's obviously often a link to rates there as well. Across the farmland ecosystem today, I may flip this number a little bit, but it's roughly 13 or 14% leverage. Like wow. Very, very low leverage.
Wow.
And so
I never heard in any other real estate market, right?
That's correct. But I think for us, that's a relatively positive thing, right? And that we're as an industry, not exposed to intense,
speculation.
That's right. You look at commercial for the next commercial real estate in the next couple of years, and the tail on those refis is pretty insane.
Right. And what type of levels of leverage do you take when you put together transactions or funds or what have you?
You're going to think I'm crazy, but it's usually zero.
We
usually do not lever. When we do, it's anywhere from like 20 to 50%.
Right.
Maybe once we had something come through that was closer to 60 LTV, mm-hmm. But it's usually limited, if any at all.
Right. Okay. Can you talk about the differences or similarities between what you're doing in the US and perhaps other farmland markets in other parts of the world, Europe, Australia, maybe South America, et cetera?
I'm not sure what we do exists in a lot of those markets. What we do, we also do in Australia. So we've had Australian offerings on the platform, it's a pretty interesting market. We'll likely look at a few other international markets over the coming year or two. But as a whole, what we do is pretty simple, right? To call that out as well, which is take a farm, put it in a unique special purpose vehicle, and then the investors can buy a portion of that. So they own, have direct ownership in the LLC, which owns the title.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Usually. And the holding period tends to be for how long? And who determines that?
Usually 5 to 10 years is the rough holding period there.
Right. And you guys manage it and then decide when to sell it?
That's correct. We have a farm management team here. We work with third-party farm managers as well out in the field. And then we have an investment committee here internally.
Right. In other alternative asset classes, I'll draw a straight line equivalent to SME private equity, small mid-market private equity. What you've seen over time is more players come into the market, which has meant that there, on one hand, prices get driven up a bit, but and leverage levels, but also you end up with more exit options because you can now sell to other funds or slightly bigger funds. What is the exit for Xtrader? Where do you see the buyer?
So the private equity is one. We've had some funds be buyers in the genre of our platform today, and like my seller. So we're seeing them improve liquidity in the market, and I believe that's important for a functioning market. And that has been a really big trend, is the entry of private equity and family offices participating in farmland. And that we've seen just tremendous, tremendous growth in that. But for some perspective, still very small, still like 1 or 2%, probably 2% at this point, institutionalized. So very, very tiny amount of that institutionalization. And that's just because it's huge. There's almost $4 trillion of farmland just in the US. So it's a very, very large market.
Wow. Interesting. And in that $4 trillion market, what have you seen happen through 2022 and first quarter 2023 in terms of pricing?
Generally steady increases. In some places, there have been, the prices have moved faster than we probably like them to. We just like that consistent compounding over time. But as a whole, it's been positive for farmland out there.
Okay. A lot of investors have concerns around environmental issues, sustainability concerns. How does farmland fit, pluses and minuses when you think about those types of investing frameworks?
So the great news is there's real opportunity to improve ecological stewardship in farmland investing. So, it's look across that spectrum of ESG. A big part of what we do is we enroll each farm in Leading Harvest, which is like a merit checklist based program. So if plenty of people that'll say regenerative or use words that don't necessarily mean much. We like having actual checklist that we enroll each farm that comes through our platform into this program. And we actually just passed our audit for that. We get audited for each of those farms to make sure that we're upholding those environmental standards. That's important. Another important part of our business that doesn't get much focus or attention is that we raise money with farmers, right? So most of the deals that come to us come from farmers. They're coming and saying, hey, I want to grow my business. And I know somebody that's retiring and I can purchase their land as an example. And so we'll go out and raise capital and help that farmer grow their business in their local market. So it's a pretty exciting social benefit of our company as well.
Right. And are you 100% owner of the farm, or are you often going into partnership with the farmer or with others?
That's correct. Quite often the farmer will have a financial interest in that farm. We just recently launched our broker dealer, and a big reason for that was to allow that farmer to actually have more of like a carried interest, you know, act as like a mini sponsor effectively.
In
private equity often, so that farmer can have real financial upside in improving the value in that land.
Interesting. Okay. And how do they improve the value of the land? Is that by changing crops? Is that by better techniques? What do they do?
All the above. So soil management is important. Keeping the place clean. So things like ditches and making sure water is able to get on and off of the farm well. So call it basic maintenance, right? Still nothing like a commercial real estate building, but it is important that we're out there taking really good care of that land and making sure that the soil is ready for the next generation of growth.
No, nobody's washing windows. Nobody's sweeping driveways.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So, and if you look, ahead, you know, the next 10 years, what are some of the opportunities and perhaps what are some of the risks for this market?
I believe some of the greater opportunities are the improvements in transparency that are occurring, the improvements in liquidity and access, frankly, more people coming in participating, right? We've got 100,000+ people that have signed up through our website, interested in farmland investing. We see that as a big positive, right? It's bringing investment dollars to rural America, rural regions of the world, and helping to grow businesses and grow ultimately the output there, which is farming products, food, fuel, and fiber that we all need. So very excited about that continued professionalization within the asset class and the benefits that can bring to both the investors and to farmers and ultimately to society as a whole. So very excited to see a lot of this play out in the coming decade ahead of us. The risks are the same, which is that if you get a bunch of speculators coming in, that's not necessarily a great thing for any market. Again, we're at 2% today, so there's a lot of room for investors to come in. But that's certainly real. And not everything is the same, right? As I mentioned earlier, the idiosyncrasies from one parcel to next. We do hope that these are professional investors and organizations participating here that are doing the right thing and also buying the right stuff.
Right. Fantastic. Well, that was hugely interesting and eye opening. I had no idea prior to this that this was such a different and developing market and such a big market as well. So Carter Malloy, thank you very, very much for coming on to the Definitely Uncertain podcast.
Thank you, Darren.
Great. And you have a great day in Arkansas. And thanks for all of you out there are watching and listening. There'll be more episodes coming your way soon with as interesting as conversations as the one that I just had with Carter. So thanks, everybody. Thank you. And goodbye.